me and sent me to my room. When I came out for dinner, he was gone. Once again, I had disobeyed him, and that's why I thought he left. Mom told me later about Dad's affair, and I think he'd used the punishment to get me out of the room. He and Mom were having one of their screaming matches.
Why didn't you tell me this before?
Same reason as you. I felt guilty, so I held it all in. I didn't learn about Dad's affair until after I graduated from high school. For 5 years, I blamed myself.
She reached over and squeezed my fingers. Feeling guilty is natural. Just don't hang on to it as long as I did. You'll only get depressed, and there isn't a damn thing you can do to change the past.
That was easier said than done.
What am I supposed to do now? I asked.
She arched a brow.
About James?
No, work. I need to find a job.
I needed to cook and bake, create. That was where James and I were alike. Where he painted to relieve stress or think through an issue, I baked. A lot. My fingers itched to dig out ingredients from the cabinets to mix a new batch of dough unlike the one I'd made this morning. Lost in my thoughts, I'd added too much water. The dough was too sticky. Clingy.
You can find work, or... She paused for effect. You can travel.
That's what Thomas suggested. Because of our honeymoon plans, I had a passport, but I'd never been anywhere without James. It would be strange traveling alone. He was the spontaneous one, always veering off the plotted course to venture into side roads.
You never know what surprises you'll find, he'd once told me.
Nadia smiled.
I like his line of thinking.
I shook my head. No traveling, not yet.
Then open a restaurant.
Did my dad tell you to say that?
She laughed. No, but I think it's a great idea.
So did James. He wanted me to open a cafe, said I could brew a mean cup of coffee.
It's something to consider.
Starting a restaurant from scratch without James by my side was an overwhelming prospect. I glanced over my shoulder at Kristen.
What do you think?
She held up her hands.
Hey, I'm on Team Amy. Whatever makes you happy.
James and the goat made me happy. Nadia took her plate to the sink. Kristen peeked inside the fridge and opened cabinets. I watched them both, recalling today was Monday.
Shouldn't you be working?
I have a sub, so you have me all day.
Kristen was an elementary school teacher and taught year-round. She had only a few weeks left in the summer session before the new school year started. She and Nick had married last year. They wanted to start a family soon, and we'd planned to raise our kids together.
So much for that idea.
Nadia put her plate in the dishwasher and dried her hands.
I'm free only until 2.
Kristen looked around a cabinet door.
You said you had all day.
I received a call on my way over about the retail space downtown. The new lessee accepted my proposal and wants to meet ASAP.
The space on North Santa Cruz Avenue? I asked.
The one between the dance studio and wine bar?
It was the only available spot I knew about, and I knew about it only because of James.
The very one. It'll be an art gallery.
I balked.
Are you kidding me?
Nadia gave me an odd look.
No. Is everything okay?
You're designing a gallery in the very spot James had planned to rent for his gallery.
She cringed.
I'm sorry. I waved her off. Not your fault.
Kristen poked her head into the fridge again.
Where did you put the wine, Nadia?
There wasn't a bottle with the groceries?
Kristen shook her head and Nadia shrugged.
It probably didn't get bagged.
There should be a few bottles chilling in the garage fridge, I offered, in a tone heavy with emotion. My thoughts were still on the gallery space downtown. Its lease was hard confirmation that dream would never transpire.
Kristen gave me a wary look and went into the garage, the door slamming behind her. She returned a moment later with a bottle of Chardonnay.
When did you clean your garage?
Does it look like I've cleaned?
I waved an arm to encompass the open living space. Unanswered mail piled high on the countertop. Unread newspapers stacked on the floor.
Dust bunnies mingled and multiplied in the corners.
Whatever. She popped the wine cork and poured three glasses. The garage looks good.
We drank the wine and talked about Nadia's new design project. Soon her appointment alarm buzzed on her phone. She glanced at the screen.
I have to go. I'll call you tomorrow.
She kissed my cheek and grabbed her hobo bag. The handle snagged on the chair back, and everything dumped. Lipstick, pens, mints, and papers skidded across the tile floor. She swore, and I bent to help her.
I've got it.
She waved my hands aside and scooped up her belongings.
Gotta run.
She rushed to the door. I waved goodbye and launched a playlist on the stereo, wondering how long Kristen would stay. She poured another round of wine.
Good.
She planned to stay for a while. We danced and talked and watched a chick flick on pay-per-view. The doorbell rang around 10 p.m. Nick had come to pick up his wife.
I'll call you tomorrow.
Kristen pushed off the couch. I walked with her to the door. She bear-hugged me.
Night-night, sweetie.
Nick wrapped his arm around her, tucked her into his side. They were a perfect fit. I watched him brush aside wisps of his wife's blonde hair with his fingertips. He kissed her on the forehead, eyes briefly closing. Their caress was intimate. My heart twisted. I'd lost my opportunity to have that with James.
Will you be okay tonight?
Nick asked me.
Did I have a choice?
I'll be fine.
Call if you need anything.
Thanks. I shut and locked the door after they said goodbye, listening to Nick drive away. I slid to the floor, my back to the door, and my eyes drifted closed. I felt myself floating from the wine. Sounds and smells penetrated my foggy mind. Ticking from the mantel clock, humming from the air conditioner, scents of lemongrass and coconut from burning candles. My eyes flew open. I needed to blow out the candles. I eased up, and a small scrap of paper underneath the kitchen chair caught my attention. It was bent in half and propped like a miniature tent. I went over and picked it up, peered at the text. Lacey Saunders. The psychic from James's funeral. I'd almost forgotten about her. Nadia must have left the card when the contents of her purse spilled. I stared at the card. James is alive. Lacey's words whispered through my head. What a nut job. I tossed the card onto the countertop and moved through the house, blowing out candles, locking doors, and turning off lights. I double-checked the garage, and sure enough, Kristen had left the single overhead light. I flicked it off, only to flick it right back on. Behind my VW Beetle was a large empty space, where there should have been 8 boxes loaded with James's bubble-wrapped canvases. They were gone. I walked around my car and gazed stupidly at the bare cement floor. Only one box remained. Where were the others? How long had they been gone? I'd been so out of sorts these past months, the boxes could have disappeared at any time. Maybe James had wanted more space in the garage and had moved the paintings to his company's warehouse. Thomas might know where they were. I should call him. Tomorrow, I thought, yawning. I returned inside and crashed in bed. Chapter 4, October. Days came and went, each blurring into the next. Endless nights out with Nadia, dinners with Kristen and her husband, and countless evenings alone, watching movies from the couch. When there wasn't anything interesting to watch, I baked. Every so often I drove to the GOAT and worked my shift, but the certainty it would close soon only served as a reminder that I'd have to figure out what to do with my life. So I stopped going. Mail piled higher, newspapers stacked taller, dishes collected in the sink, glasses littered any available surface through the house. Casseroles, cakes, and cookies sat uneaten on the kitchen table. The washer and dryer were used only when my situation was dire, like when I'd run out of underwear. I packed my days and crammed my nights until I crashed. When I woke, my mind and body dragging, I got creative with espresso. I mixed exotic beans and syrups to keep me wired, and then I baked some more.
My house was a mess. My life was a disaster. I was a wreck. Until the day I woke up. It was to the sound of a lawnmower. I peeked through the front window blinds and saw Nick move back and forth across the lawn. The front door opened and Kristen gaped at me.
You are awake?
I thought I'd join the human race. I thumbed out the window. He's got to stop doing that. Kristen shut the door.
He wants to help, and I think it helps him.
I collapsed an empty tissue box. How so?
He misses James.
We all do. I collected dirty glassware around the front room. The yard looks gorgeous, but it's been 11 weeks. He can't cut my grass for the rest of his life.
So said the woman who just returned to the land of the living.
Kristen followed me into the kitchen.
I'll tell him you've hired a gardener.
Perfect. She sniffed the air. Scents of cinnamon and maple syrup hovered sweetly in the room.
Coffee cake?
She asked. I motioned toward the casserole dishes and platters crowding the kitchen table, and her eyes bugged.
You've been busy. Are you planning to eat all this?
I gave her a sheepish look.
I've sort of been feeding the neighborhood.
While my next-door neighbor and her husband appreciated the warm dishes to go with their dinners, and their three kids loved the treats I brought them, they did ask I stop feeding their family. I was spending too much money on them, money I didn't have in the bank, because I still couldn't convince myself to cash Thomas's check. Even though my credit card was almost maxed out from groceries, I would probably end up donating the results of the most recent cooking binge to St. Anthony's Soup Kitchen, where Mom volunteered. Kristen helped herself to a slice.
Oh, wow. This isn't your mom's recipe.
She moaned.
It's better.
I added sour cream. It changes the texture, makes the cake light and tender. She shoveled the last bite and added another slice to her plate.
So what's with the cooking frenzy?
You know me. I have to keep busy. Keeps my mind off things. A soft smile touched her lips.
James wasn't the only artist in the house.
My mouth curved up at the corner. Yeah, we were good like that. I went to the sink and rinsed dishes. Kristen finished the coffee cake, then straightened several months' worth of mail on the countertop. A stack spilled, and envelopes cascaded to the floor. She picked them up.
Whoa! What's this?
I looked at what she held. Thomas's check, buried and ignored with the other mail. It's from Thomas.
What? Why?
He was James's beneficiary. Thomas figured I was entitled to the money since James and I were about to get married.
That was nice of him. God!
Kristen flapped the check.
Nice doesn't come close. This is huge. You can start your own restaurant with this kind of cash.
Yeah, well, if that's what I decide to do. She stared at the check.
It's dated on your wedding.
Sorry. The check's the same date as James's funeral. I dried my hands and took the check from her. That's when Thomas gave it to me, right before Lacey approached me.
Who's Lacey? Is she that lady we saw you talking to in the parking lot?
I nodded. She's a psychic. Laughter bubbled from Kristen.
A what?
A psychic counselor. Like a fortune teller? More like a psychic profiler, I think.
No wonder Nadia took her card from you. I'd be concerned, too, if someone like that approached me. What did she tell you?
James is still alive. Kristen's mouth fell open. The clock in the front room ticked. Then it ticked again. She sucked in a breath.
That's freaky. You don't believe her, do you?
I twisted the engagement ring around my finger. I had asked myself, what if, on numerous occasions. She narrowed her eyes.
Amy?
No, I don't. She sighed in relief.
Good, you had me worried there for a second.
She peeked at her watch.
I have to go. Class starts in 30 minutes. Oh, I almost forgot.
She dug into her purse.
This is for you.
Another business card.
Grace Peterson, PhD, clinical psychologist, grief counseling.
I'm glad you finally come up for air, but I sense you're still holding something inside. Just in case you feel the urge, talk to a counselor, a real counselor.
She flipped the card and tapped the handwriting on the back.
I've scheduled an appointment today at 11. You can change the time or day, cancel if you want, up to you.
Thanks, I said, unsure whether I would go. I tossed the card onto the kitchen table right next to Lacey's.
I'll call you after work.
Kristen kissed my cheek and left. By the time I'd cleaned, showered, and dressed in jeans, a light sweater, and flats, it was 10:58. Everything was spick and span, including me. But I was going to miss the appointment Kristen had scheduled. I wondered if I'd intentionally delayed leaving the house. Beside Grace Peterson's card, Lacey's card with the buckled crease down the middle, stared up at me. As I read the card over and over, I grew angrier. A hot spike of rage flared inside me. Why she had tracked me down at James's funeral to tell me he was alive boggled my mind. It was downright cruel. I thought of Thomas's check and wondered if she somehow knew about the money. Maybe she was trying to take advantage of me. But there were two words on the card that grew bigger and bolder the longer I glared at them. Missing persons. They were printed right above her tagline, helping you find the answers you seek. She'd better have answers, like why she had the gall to approach me. I picked up the card and grabbed my keys, while at the same time despising the fact I was even considering meeting with her. The address on Lacey's card was to a house in a residential district skirting the border of Los Gatos and Campbell. I eased to the curb in front of her one-story ranch. A portable sign was posted on the front lawn. Lacey's psychic counseling. Tarot cards, palm readings, walk-ins welcome. The sign evoked a very different impression from Lacey, the psychic profiler. She was no better than a carny fortune teller. God, I was an idiot. Nadia had warned me not to be naive. Through the passenger window, I saw Lacey watching me from her kitchen. The skin between my shoulder blades tingled, and I turned away, directing my gaze outside the windshield. Get out of the car, Amy. I sensed her eyes on me as I coaxed myself from the car. Or was that her speaking to me inside my head? I shook off the feeling and got out of the car, shutting the door behind me. Hello, Amy. Lacey stood on the sidewalk. I jerked and stared. I hadn't seen her leave the house. Do you want to come inside? She gave me an easy smile. My mouth worked, but no words followed. Lacey watched me expectantly until I mumbled an apology and fumbled for the door handle behind me. I had an odd feeling she did know something about James, something even I didn't know, and that scared me. I slid into the driver's seat and thrust the key into the ignition. Lacey knocked on the passenger window. I bounced in my seat. Where are you going? She asked. I'm sorry, coming here was a mistake. I revved the engine, and she jumped away from the car. I pressed the accelerator, using more force than intended. The car lurched forward, and I sped away. I took the long way home, side streets instead of freeways, all the while berating myself for being so stupid. God, I'm an idiot. By the time I arrived home, Lacey was sitting on my porch. I hesitated at the picket fence bordering my front yard, and she rose to her feet. Don't worry, I'm not staying, she said, slowly approaching me. She held up my wallet. I found this in the street. I looked vacantly at the olive green Gucci James had given me 2 years ago for my birthday. It looked out of place in her hand. She smiled. It softened her face, making her appear younger than the late 40s age I assumed she was. Everything's still inside, she told me when I took the wallet. I only glanced at your driver's license to get the address. Nice picture. I slipped the wallet inside my purse. Your psychic talent didn't show you where I lived? She flinched at the bite in my tone. No, sorry. It doesn't work that way. Though I can say the real reason you drove to my house wasn't to find out if I was a con artist. You came seeking answers about James. You had doubts when he went missing. You still have doubts. My skin prickled, and I looked away. You're angry with me. I think you should go. I felt uncomfortable around her. She hesitated, opened and closed her mouth as though deciding to say something more. She didn't, just nodded and went to her car. I watched her drive away, surprised to find myself wondering if I would see her again. Chapter 5. My stomach growled. I heard James chuckle in the rumble of a far-off car engine. In the gentle breeze rustling my clothes, his voice tickled my ear. Let's go to Joe's. Joe's was where we'd spend our Sunday mornings. It seemed like forever since James had been gone. I missed his laugh and the dark, silky timbre of his voice. I would never again hear him say, I love you. And I was disinclined to do anything that reinforced James was gone forever, such as boxing his belongings, canceling his magazine subscriptions, or sitting at our table at Joe's, alone. But for the first time in half a year, I felt the urge to go there, linger over a bowl of heirloom tomato soup and a citrus salad. The food was wonderful at the cafe, but Joe could never brew a decent pot of coffee. James often joked I should blend drinks to bring with us. We could pay Joe a mug fee like a wine corkage fee. Joe's bitter coffee had nothing on the elixir I brewed. Rather than returning to an empty house with spoiling food, I walked 6 blocks to Joe's, hearing James beside me and the echo of my shoes on pavement. We had traversed this route many times, and it was difficult to believe he wasn't walking alongside me now, our hands clasped. I curled my fingers, my palm cold and empty. I arrived at Joe's and, pushing on the door handle, walked straight into the glass door. Ow! My hands flew to my face, eyes watering. My nose burned. I stomped in a circle, swearing as I rubbed the tender skin. I pinched the bridge of my nose and jiggled the knob. It was locked. On a Friday? Pressing my forehead to the glass, I peered inside. The cafe was dark and empty. The display cases bare. No muffins, meats, salads, or bottled drinks. In the corner of the far right window was a sign. For lease. I stared blankly for a long moment. Joe's Coffee House was closed. Gone forever. I thought of the mornings James and I had walked here for breakfast, the familiar scents of roasting coffee, freshly baked scones, and potato frittatas were what had brought me here this morning. It was our place. It was my place. I jerked back from the window. This can be my place, I said to my reflection. In that moment, I knew exactly what I wanted to do, what I had to do. Open my own restaurant, right here in Joe's old spot. It was what James would have wanted. I would do this for James. Excitement buzzed through me like a jolt of caffeine. Before I changed my mind, I punched the lease agent's name and number into my phone and saved the contact file. Anticipation bubbled inside me. I glanced around, my gaze settling on the storefronts 2 blocks up the road. Nadia might be on site at the art gallery. It was still under construction. I left Joe's and called Nadia. You go, tell me what you think, Nadia encouraged. The gallery's not open to the public yet. I can't go inside. Of course you can. Wendy's hanging art for the grand opening. I'm not sure. I'd hoped Nadia would be there so I could share my idea about Joe's. My stomach growled again. She made an impatient noise. Tell her I sent you. She won't mind if you look around. All right, I'll peek inside. I paused at the corner. A car sped by and I jumped away from the curb. I need to prep for a conference call. I'll swing by your place this evening after work. I want to hear what you think of the color scheme and layout. Okay. I'll see you tonight. She disconnected the call. I almost walked past the gallery. Nadia had transformed the entire facade. Everything had been updated. Larger windows, tall side-by-side glass doors, overhead lights tucked under a wood-framed awning. Potted honeysuckle vines reached skyward on both sides of the storefront. An elegant font had been etched into the glass. Wendy V. Yee Gallery, where the local photographer goes international. Photographs, not paintings. Nadia had been working on a different type of gallery than I expected, and she'd created a beautiful space for Wendy to showcase her artist's photographic talent. Propped on the wide window ledge was a breathtaking photo of a lavender-orange sky kissing aquamarine waters. The image was magical, simply titled Belize Sunrise. I felt myself falling into the picture, sitting on the sand and watching the morning light play on the tide, a salty, humid breeze teasing my skin. I wanted to go there. According to the name under the title, the photographer was Ian Collins. Considering how captivating the lighting was in Belize Sunrise, Ian was an extraordinary artist as far as I was concerned. The gallery's double glass doors were propped open. Inside, the old floor had been replaced with white plank, blonde-stained wood. The lighter color kept eyes off the floor and on the art. Whitewashed walls, still barren of artwork, were divided into three display areas separated by brick partitions. I could see the back wall, but the partitions divided the open space, lending the gallery a more intimate ambiance despite the open floor plan. James would have loved what Nadia had done. My shoes echoed as I walked around. Voices carried from behind a partition. I heard hammering, followed by a thud and a grunt, and then a thick rope of cursing.
"Enough already, Ian. Let me call the contractor. He can do this for me."
"Get off the phone. He charges. I'm free."
"At the rate you're going, you'll spend more money on first aid. Save your thumbs. Bruce can handle this."
"This is the last hook."
More hammering.
"Voilà fini,"
the man with the hammer announced in a horrible French accent. A giggle bubbled from me, and I clamped a hand over my mouth. "Thanks, Ian, but don't quit your day job."
"I don't have a day job."
Ian appeared from around the partition. He stopped abruptly when he saw me, his eyes meeting mine. I felt myself drawn to their amber depths. Light hair fell over his forehead, and I had an unexpected urge to run my fingers through the wave. My face heated. Where had that thought come from? The hard line of his jaw twitched, and a smile tugged at the corner of his mouth.
"Hey there."
I stared stupidly at him. His facial twitch lifted to a full-fledged grin.
"Oh, wow."
"Ian?" called the woman. Light footfalls brought a woman into view. "Oh, I didn't know we had a visitor. Can I help you?" I jerked in her direction. She was slender and petite, dressed entirely in black. Sleek ebony hair draped her shoulders. A hint of a smile touched her lips. I shoved out my arm. "I'm Amy Tierney, Nadia's friend." She shook my hand. "Wendy Yee, this is Ian Collins." She tipped her head in his direction. "One of the photographers I work with. I saw the photo in the window. It's beautiful."
"Thanks," he said and grasped my hand. "Nice to meet you, Amy."
"Sorry to have bothered you," I said to Wendy. "I only wanted to look at Nadia's design work."
"No bother. You are welcome anytime. Our opening celebration is next week, if you're interested."
"You should come," Ian prompted.
My gaze bounced between them. "I don't know anything about photography."
"You only need to know how to enjoy yourself."
He grinned.
"Nadia will be here."
"I'll get you an invitation."
Wendy went to the desk in the rear corner of the gallery. I refused to look at Ian, but I felt his gaze on me. Wendy returned and gave me a crisp, open-flapped envelope with a white cardstock tucked inside. "Next Thursday, 8 o'clock. "Thank you." I slipped the invitation into my shoulder bag. Ian rubbed his stomach.
"I'm starved. Let's go eat, Wendy."
"You go ahead. I have to finish up here."
She waved him off.
"I'll bring something back for you."
"Thanks."
She took the hammer from him and disappeared behind the partition. Ian looked at me.
Lunch?
I took an involuntary step back. He smirked.
If two women shoot me down in less than 60 seconds, I'll wonder if I've lost my touch.
He crossed his arms and sniffed an armpit.
Or if I forgot to wear deodorant.
I snorted a laugh. Thanks for the offer, but no.
I'm not that bad of company. Let's grab a bite.
My stomach decided to exert its independence and remind me why I'd walked downtown. It growled loud and long. Ian cocked a brow and motioned toward the door.
There's a firewood pizza spot on the corner. We can eat outside.
Rumble. Pizza it is, then. I followed him through the doorway and thumbed at the photo in the window. Do you travel often?
Every 4 to 6 months, I'll take short excursions. Every few years, a longer trip. I have a photo expedition coming up, he said as we walked.
It must be nice going to exotic places.
It has its perks.
He glanced at me.
Have you done much traveling?
I shook my head. Road trips, nothing out of the country.
If you could travel anywhere, where would you go?
I blurted the first thing in my mind. The beach in your photo.
It's a beautiful spot. You should go.
I wish. Too expensive. His eyes crinkled.
Yeah. Money always seems to be the issue.
We stopped at a corner and waited for the light to change. I haven't seen your work before. Do you show elsewhere? I asked when we crossed the street.
Aside from online, only at Wendy's Laguna Beach Gallery. She likes to promote local artists.
You live in Southern California?
I used to. I grew up in Idaho before moving to SoCal. I've been in Los Gatos for only a few years. Took me that long to convince Wendy to open a gallery here. Lately, I've been on the road a lot.
Always on the hunt for the next great shot? When he nodded, I asked, Do you shoot people? Ian held up two fingers pressed together.
I've never killed anyone. Scout's honor.
Color rose up my neck. Oh, no, I meant pictures. Do you take pictures of people, like portraits? His expression darkened.
Landscapes are my niche.
We stepped aside to let a woman by, pushing a stroller.
So what do you do?
Ian asked. I'm a sous chef or restaurant manager, depending on the day. For the last couple of weeks, I hadn't been much of either. Have you been to the old Irish goat? He shook his head.
I've heard of it.
My parents owned the restaurant.
Owned?
My shoulders dropped a fraction. Yeah, they sold it. As of next week, the goat's under new ownership.
I'm guessing you need a new job,
he ventured. Looks that way. Ian held open the door when we arrived at the restaurant. The hostess seated us on the side deck facing the street. She handed over menus and took our drink orders, water for Ian and iced tea for me. When she left, Ian propped his elbows on the table, chin resting on clasped hands.
So, what's the story?
I frowned. He nodded at my face.
Your nose. What happened?
My hand flew to cover my nose while I wrestled one-handed with my purse, searching for a mirror. Ian chuckled. He touched my wrist.
It's not too bad. Just a bit red and swollen.
Thanks a lot. He laughed before his face softened.
Does it hurt?
A little. I'm trying to ignore it. But Ian staring at me wasn't helping. I wanted to crawl under the table and hide.
Here, let me see.
He eased my hand aside and gently prodded the tissue and cartilage. I hissed.
Tender?
I nodded.
Did your nose bleed?
No. I rapidly blinked my eyes. His touch was soothing. Unsettling, but in a good way.
You might have some skin discoloration and soreness for a few days.
A photographer and a doctor. You're a man of many talents.
I wish, but no such luck. Just a photographer who's had his share of bumps and bruises.
Whatever it takes to get the best shot?
Something like that.
He leaned away.
You'll be back to your gorgeous self by the gallery's opening.
I'm not beautiful now. I couldn't help goading him. He smiled, and a shiver of excitement coursed through me. Our drinks arrived and we placed our orders, a personalized pizza for each of us.
Do you know Joe's Coffee House?
I asked.
The cafe on the corner. It's closed, isn't it?
I didn't know. I ran into the locked door. Ian paused, his water glass halfway to his mouth. His lips twitched, as though he was trying not to laugh.
If you were so desperate for a cup of coffee, I could have made you one.
I flashed a smile. No one brews better coffee than me.
Not even Joe.
Especially not Joe, I said, recalling his bitter Java with the burned aftertaste.
Sounds like a challenge. One of these days, you and me, he said, pointing between us. We'll see who brews the best pot.
You make specialty coffees? A smile spread wide across my face. I shook his hand, sealing the deal.
You're on. You should open a coffee shop in Joe's old place, especially if you can cook as well as you claim to blend coffees, he said with a crooked grin that made my insides dance upside down. The stuff those chains serve is crap. Pardon the French.
Your French is horrible. I mimicked the voilà fini I'd heard him say earlier.
Tell you what.
He leaned closer. I'll stop speaking French if you serve your coffee. I folded the napkin on my lap and ducked my head to hide a smile. That was exactly what I'd been planning an hour ago. Our pizza arrived and Ian ordered one to go for Wendy. Lunch flew by. And when the waitress brought our checks, I opened my wallet. Ian dug out his from his back pocket.
I'll take care of this.
This wasn't a date. The corners of his eyes crinkled. He seemed amused.
If you say so, but you are a potential client. You're coming Thursday, right?
Yes, but...
You're going to want one of my photos. You'll need spare change for next week.
I gave him a direct look. You're that confident I'll buy one?
A guy can dream.
Ian tossed a credit card onto the table, and I zipped up my wallet. The metal teeth snagged on something. I tugged out the offending paper and felt the color drain from my face. It was a business card from Casa del Sol, a resort in Oaxaca, Mexico. No employee name or title, just the resort address, phone number, and website. Lacey must have put it there.
Are you okay?
I looked up at Ian. Yeah, I'm fine.
Did I say something to offend you? If you really want to pay...
I shook my head. No. No, I'm good. Ian lowered his gaze and watched me fidget with my wallet. His eyes dimmed, and I felt his withdrawal. I wanted to explain my mood swing wasn't his fault, but then I would have to explain what bothered me. Telling him a psychic had slipped a mystery business card into my wallet sounded too strange. By the way, she thinks my deceased fiancé is anything but deceased. Ian paid the check, and we returned to the gallery, stopping outside the doors, which were now closed. I held out my hand. Thanks for lunch. His expression was guarded, but he smiled and took my hand.
You're welcome.
It was nice meeting you. I turned to leave, only to pause when he said my name.
See you Thursday.
He smiled, the warmth back. I returned his grin and nodded. See you Thursday. Chapter 6 Nadia called and canceled our evening. She had a new project underway and the client had asked to meet over dinner to discuss the plans before he flew out of town. Wendy mentioned she invited you to the opening next Thursday. Are you going?
Probably.
I thought of Ian. I wanted to see more of his photos.
You can come with me. We'll be each other's date.
As long as you don't kiss me goodnight. She snorted.
Deal.
So, what do you think of Ian?
I loved
the design scheme. Or that was what I planned to say until her question registered.
She laughed.
He's gorgeous, isn't he?
Your design scheme is gorgeous.
Do you like him?
I like the work you did in the gallery.
Amy? She dragged out my name.
Okay, I like him. He seems really nice.
Ask him out.
What? I'd never asked anyone out before. I'd never dated, and James didn't count. He and I had always been a couple. I can't. It's too soon.
James died almost 5 months ago. You have your whole life in front of you.
I'm not ready.
She sighed. All right, fine, I won't push, but one day you'll be ready. The human spirit is amazingly resilient, and the human body is surprisingly horny.
She laughed, and I rolled my eyes.
We'll go shopping next week. Pick up something hot for you.
Sure, I said, more to placate than agree.
I have to get ready. We'll chat later.
Nadia said goodbye and disconnected.
Several hours later, I found myself staring at the business card Lacey tucked inside my wallet. I sat at the computer in the front bedroom we'd used for James's art studio. His supplies were still scattered throughout the room. An unfinished painting waited on the easel. I turned on the monitor and brought up the resort's website. Casa del Sol. Tiled roofs sloped over hacienda-style arches that rose above Playa Zicatela. The hotel was located in the town of Puerto Escondido on the emerald coast of Oaxaca, Mexico. I flicked the corner of the business card. It didn't make sense. James hadn't been anywhere near Puerto Escondido, which was almost 1,000 miles from where he should have been, according to the map app on my phone. He'd flown into Cancun with plans for dinner in Playa del Carmen after spending the day fishing off Cozumel. Thomas had gone to Cancun to retrieve James's body. Or so he told me.
Call Thomas, Amy.
I felt more than heard the words in my head.
James, don't turn around, I told myself. He wouldn't be there.
As for Thomas, it had been over a month since his last visit. He'd stopped by to see how I was doing and ended up staying for dinner. I called him.
Hey, Amy, he answered with a raspy voice.
I heard rustling through the phone line, then a steady low hum in the background. It sounded as if he'd moved outside or stood by an open window.
Where are you?
More rustling. He cleared his throat.
Overseas.
Europe? It would be dawn. He must be tired.
Sorry, did I wake you up? I'll call later.
No, I'm good. He groaned. I imagined him rubbing his forehead.
What's up?
Did you... My voice trailed. Asking Thomas if he had retrieved James's body from Cancun and not someplace else like Oaxaca, Mexico, didn't seem like a logical, thought-out question. Nor did, are you sure you brought home the right body and not some other John Doe, which would have been my next question. I had no proof, other than a business card and the word of a psychic, that James was not dead.
Are you still there?
Thomas broke into my thoughts. I'm here. Sorry to disturb you. It's just... I closed my eyes and breathed deeply.
I miss him too,
he confessed after a moment.
I know. Thanks.
I let you go. Good night, Thomas.
Take care, Amy.
I set the phone on my desk beside Thomas's check. I stared at it, thinking about the lease sign downtown.
Do it, Amy.
I snagged the phone and called Dad. It was late. His voicemail answered. Hi, Dad. I held the check. I just called to say, well, I've figured out what I want to do, so you don't have to worry about me. I'm going to be okay. No, I am okay. That's all. I love you. Mom, too. Bye. I flipped the check over and my stomach followed. I was a culinary school graduate and could plan a 5-course meal for hundreds of guests, but the thought of brewing coffee and baking muffins for one customer in my cafe was daunting. But at the same time, I felt liberated. Amy's Cafe. James had suggested the name. He'd even sketched a logo the night before he left. If he intended to pursue his passion and open a gallery, he wanted me to do the same. Quit the goat and start my own restaurant. Cook what I wanted, not what the type of restaurant dictated. Did I want to cook Irish pub food the rest of my life? I spun the platinum engagement band around my finger. The diamond solitaire glittered in the monitor's glow. Even with James by my side, the idea was intimidating. But it was time to move forward. Nadia would say I was entering the next stage of grief. Onward and upward. I endorsed the check, then I called the leasing agent and left a message. When I hung up, reality set in. My birthday was next week. I'd be 27 and well on my way to becoming the proud, naive owner of a business with no plan, no employees, and no product. Brenda Wakely met me in front of Joe's Coffee House at 10 Monday morning. She was tall and lean and wore a white silk blouse tucked into an electric blue skirt with heels to match. Her bobbed white hair, dusted with silver streaks, curled around her ears. She cleared her throat and introduced herself while unlocking the door. The alarm system counted down a warning. "Have a look around while I shut this off." She rushed down the hallway past the restrooms to the back door. Joe hadn't removed anything since he closed. Formica tables crowded the room, vinyl chairs stacked against the back wall, linoleum flooring stained and peeling in heavy traffic areas. The air was stale. A faint odor of burned coffee beans and bacon grease filled my lungs, stirring memories. My gaze settled on the table in the corner. How many Sunday mornings had James and I sat by that window, watching passers-by as we drank bitter coffee and ate omelets doused in Tabasco sauce? Turning in a slow circle, I looked around the dining room. While the world had changed around Joe, nothing about Joe's had changed. Black and white pictures dating back 50 years decorated the rear wall. Plastic menus stacked by the cash register listed the same food selections he'd offered since I started eating here 20 years ago. "What do you think?" Brenda asked. "I loved Joe's. I miss this place." "Me too. But he had too much competition from those trendy spots. I do love their drive-thrus, so I can't complain." I walked behind the service counter. "The appliances need to be updated." She pointed toward the grease-stained commercial range through the kitchen service window. "Frankly, the entire place needs to be stripped and power-washed." She held her hands away from the dingy countertops. "What did you say your business is?" "A cafe." I pushed the keys on the antiquated cash register. The two keys stuck. "Well, more a boutique coffee shop and gourmet eatery." She smiled wryly. "Another coffee shop. A risky business, if you ask me." She tapped the leather-bound portfolio she held. "The owner wants the tenant to sign a long-term lease, 15 to 20 years. That was a long time. I inspected the cabinets. "Who owns the building?" "Joseph Russo." "Joe's the owner?" I should have known. Maybe I could call him directly, arrange a deal. "Do you know him personally?" "My parents owned the old Irish goat. They've known Joe for many years through the chamber and other associations. Has anyone applied for the lease yet?" "I have two other applicants. This space will go fast. Joe wants to make his decision by Thursday." 3 days to decide? I felt rushed, but I could miss out. Then what? I wanted my cafe downtown. The corner location was ideal, but more important, I felt a connection here to James. I twisted the ring on my finger. "How much is the monthly lease?" Brenda rattled off a number, more than I'd anticipated. One more reason to call Joe. I should do more planning, and I shouldn't hurry into any decisions, but I didn't want to lose this location. I smiled at Brenda. "I want to apply." "Wonderful." She opened her portfolio and handed me a few forms. We discussed the terms some more, and while I completed the lease application and credit report, Brenda moved to the other side of the restaurant and sat down, tapping vigorously on her smartphone. When I finished, she thanked me. "I'll run your credit report, and if your history checks out, I'll follow up with your references." She shook my hand. "I hope everything works out for you." Brenda locked up behind us and waved goodbye. I returned home feeling giddy. Over the next few days, I researched, planned, applied for a business license, and put my finances back in order. For the first time in 5 months, I had something to look forward to. Nadia woke me late Thursday morning, I dragged myself to the front door. I'd been up late drafting business and marketing plans. My God, you're not shopping in that. She made a disgusted face at my rumpled shirt and PJ bottoms and pushed past me.
Good morning to you, too.
I yawned and closed the door.
What time is it?
Time for you to dress. We have less than 2 hours to find an outfit for tonight's opening party before my lunch meeting.
I'll wear something I already have.
I returned to the bedroom. She followed me.
Like what?
I shrugged. She yanked open the closet doors and stilled. She blew out a breath as she glanced over James's side of the closet. His clothes were still there, undisturbed. She shut the doors.
Get dressed. You need something new. We're going to Santana Row.
I have to shower. No time. Spray on perfume. She made a fluttery motion with her fingers around my head. And brush your hair. 25 minutes later, dressed in jeans, t-shirt, and sneakers, my wild curls banded in a high ponytail, I stood beside Nadia as she flitted through a clothes rack. She roughly pushed hangers aside, giving each dress in my size a quick inspection. She pushed three into my arms and dragged me into the dressing area.
I still don't understand why tonight's such a big deal.
I towed off my sneakers. Hello, Ian will be there. Not interested.
Uh-huh, sure.
Nadia, I warned. I shimmied from my jeans and dragged my shirt over my head. A plain bra and boring panties stared back at me in the full-length mirror.
Then forget about Ian. Do this for yourself. It's time to jumpstart your social life. You need to date.
I'm not dating, I said icily, and tugged the first dress off the hanger.
Whatever. Hurry up, though. Time's running out.
I zipped up a dress, a cobalt sleeveless silk blend, with a tailored bodice and straight knee-length skirt, and turned before the mirror. Would Ian think me too pretentious? The dress was gorgeous, but too showy for an art exhibit, too over-the-top for Ian. James would have loved this dress. I unzipped the back and gave the dress a dirty look as it fell to the floor.
Why do I even care what either of them would think?
The next one was a black A-line with a full skirt, fitted bodice, and slim sleeves that capped my elbows. My black patent heels would be perfect with this dress. This dress would be perfect for tonight. My phone rang. I spun away from my reflection and dug the distraction from my shoulder bag.
Hello?
Amy, this is Brenda Wakely. Sorry for the delay. That's all right. I managed to sound casual, even though my heart raced. I evaluated your application. You have plenty of funds in your bank accounts, but your credit has some issues. Your recent mortgage payments have been late, and unfortunately, your credit rating has taken a big hit. I cringed.
Let me explain. I was really hoping everything would check out for you, especially since you're a friend of Joe's. I can't recommend your application to him, and I now have three other qualified applicants.
I sank onto the chair in my dressing cubby. Is there anything I can do?
Can you get a cosigner? Someone with a better credit rating?
I thought of my parents, even though I wanted to do this on my own. Then I remembered their questionable credit history. They'd had trouble making payments to their suppliers.
I'm not sure. I would need more time.
I'm afraid time is not something I have. The lease will probably go to another applicant this afternoon, tomorrow morning at the latest. Good luck finding a site. Have a lovely weekend.
Brenda hung up. I released a long sigh and stared at the ceiling.
Nadia banged on the door and I jolted.
Hello in there? Are you ready?
Give me a second. I slipped off the dress and pulled on my t-shirt.
Did you pick one?
I tossed the A-line over the door.
Nice, she cooed. Love it.
I swore I heard her say that Ian would love it too, as she left the dressing room. Chapter 7 Nadia picked me up at 8 for the gallery's opening. She was stunning in a sheath dress, the earthy color resembling dried lavender.
Her auburn hair, parted on the side, skimmed her shoulders. Smoky liner framed emerald eyes and clear gloss highlighted her full lips. She twirled an index finger, and I turned around, the A-line skirt floating outward from my legs. I'd shaped my curls, twisting the loose waves high on my head, leaving a few tendrils to frame my face. I hadn't been this dressed up since James's funeral. Nadia grinned. Tell me if I'm wrong, but don't you feel good? You look amazing. I twisted an errant corkscrew around my finger. I'm nervous. She pushed aside my hand and touched up my hair. I have only one request. What's that? Have fun. I sighed. I'll try. She exhaled and raised her eyes toward the ceiling. It helps to smile. She moved back and assessed me from head to closed-toe pump. You look beautiful. The corner of my mouth tugged upward. Much better, she exclaimed. We parked two blocks from the gallery. The night air was crisp, and I adjusted the wrap around my shoulders. Light spilled from the windows, and faint notes of soft jazz drifted from the door. Belize Sunrise still took center stage in the front window. The $2,750 price tag was new. My mouth fell open. Nadia gave me a funny look. What? I tapped the window above the price tag. He must be damn good. He is. Wait until you see his other work. She held the door open for us. You coming? Guests crowded the gallery floor. Waiters carefully navigated through Ian's fans, balancing trays laden with champagne flutes and canapes. My gaze fixed on Ian in the corner of the main viewing room. He slipped his hands into the side pockets of his dark pants and bent his head toward the woman beside him. A burnished lock fell over his brow. I watched his hand slowly rise to sweep over his head while nodding along to whatever the woman shared with him. My stomach tumbled, like his hair, and I frowned at my reaction. Nadia elbowed my ribs. Don't forget to smile. I pasted on a grin. Wendy swept across the room. Nadia, I've been looking for you. Hello, Wendy. She angled her head to receive Wendy's air kisses, then touched my shoulder. You remember my friend, Amy? Wendy shook my hand. So glad you decided to come. Please enjoy yourself. Have a glass of champagne. She motioned toward a passing waiter before turning her attention back to Nadia. A dear friend of mine loves what you've done for my gallery. He's a commercial property broker and wants to meet you. Do you mind? Nadia asked me. Not at all. Go ahead. Wendy directed me to the left side of the gallery. Start over here to experience the full effect of the exhibit. I've arranged Ian's photos so the sun rises, then sets as you circle the room. His photography is impressive. Be sure to see me if you want to purchase anything. She hooked her arm around Nadia, and they wandered behind the first set of partitions. I removed my wrap, folding the knit rectangle over my arm, and meandered through the gallery. Each image featured the sun rising or setting in an exotic foreign locale. Ian had played with the light, and the colors reflected on a hillside, across a lake surface, or through tall firs in a forest had a magical, surreal quality. I paused before one image, an intense sun in a fiery descent over Middle Eastern sand dunes. The picture had been taken in Dubai, according to the tag on the wall. Three camels stood motionless on the crest of a dune, their shadows' long fingers spread outward across sands of vivid orange and gold. What do you think? A smile played on my lips. You have an extraordinary talent for capturing sunlight. I lifted my eyes to Ian. His gaze met mine. I'm glad you're here. Me too. His forehead creased. Can I ask you a personal question? I shifted the wrap to my other arm. Okay. He pushed the wrap aside, exposing my left hand. He angled my ring finger so the overhead spotlights captured the brilliance of my engagement ring. Why didn't you tell me you are married? Because, I hesitated,
licked my lips.
I'm not.
He tugged the wrap back in place.
Engaged.
I shook my head.
I'm sorry things didn't work out for you,